Hello and welcome to the fourth episode of the Heathen Weirdos podcast, otherwise known as the episode where we can finally be unleashed to talk about the corpse maidens themselves. Yes, we made it an entire four episodes before doing it. Ultimately, this episode will be a primer on all things Valkyrie, all things Guardians of the Slaughter Gates, all things Blood Ember Goddesses. To stop this being a bit of a free-for-all, there will be some structure to this discussion. We'll cover who they are, how they appear in the lore and how this has changed over time, the archaeological evidence, academic discourse, theories, pop culture, and finally, how those that worship them do so today, why, and what does it look like? As we'll be going into ideas that are more theory and conjecture, we'll be transparent about what is written and verified, versus what we're inferring or what has been discussed by academics or our own research. That's important for this podcast, and a value we're trying to promote across the board, transparency. We'll always be open about what is our UPG versus what is in the lore. But before we go on, let's introduce the weirdos we have here today.
Hi, I'm Jay. My pronouns are she, her.
I'm Kenna. My pronouns are also she, her.
Hi, I'm Theo. My pronouns are they, them.
And it's me, Sif. My pronouns are she, her, and I will be your host for this evening. Or morning. I guess first and foremost, this episode plays into the idea I talked about in the Bones Coffee Break episode, if you've listened to that, that there's no rules about who you can and can't worship in heathenry. I know worshipping the Valkyries isn't exactly common, and it's also an example of piecing together a praxis from little historical evidence. And that's saying something, considering how little we have to work with generally. Word of warning, I am going to butcher some Old Norse here, it's inevitable. Valkyries, or Valkyria, to use the Old Norse, means choosers of the slain. And this neatly sums up their duty, to choose those fated to die on the battlefield and be taken to either Folkvanger and Freya's Hall of Sessaromnia, or Valhalla. Snorri describes how Freya gets first pick of those chosen dead, while the remainder go to Odin's Hall. We have 52 individually named Valkyries across the sagas and Eddas, but it's highly likely that the names of others have been lost to time. Their names are truly glorious. Tangnitha, Teeth Grinder, Rangritha, Shield Destroyer, Shield Truce, Sangrith, very violent, Svova, Sleepmaker or Killer, Herja, Devastator. Unsurprisingly, in the lore, the Valkyries are described sometimes as bloodthirsty war monsters who weave the entrails of men, specifically in Njal's saga there, and in the heroic sagas as glorious, dignified, armoured women who act as guides and guardians, often likened to Disir, who are better described as familial guardians. It is the heroic sagas which often give the Valkyries the role of wives and daughters, reinforcing the mythical nature of the figures in the story and elevating them to almost divine heights. The Valkyrie's seemingly drastic personality shift can be explained by the changing nature of the sagas, shifting from stories about the gods to stories about humans passed along the oral tradition. Moreover, as Rudolf Simek explains in his work in the sphere, this change also came about from Valhalla's changing reputation in the historic sagas to the warrior's paradise we still see promoted today. Hashtag Valhalla isn't heaven.
Yeah, Valhalla, not heaven. Oh my god, why would you want to go there? I mean, that's me. I don't want to fight people for eternity.
I think it's safe to say that modern worshippers today see an element of truth to both sides, and my UPG definitely falls in line with that. Also, Kenna and Jay. What about you? You can unmute now, it's fine.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for that.
do you see them as bloodthirsty warriors or dignified goddesses on horseback, or both?
A little bit of both.
I'd argue for both as well.
Yeah, because who's to say these badass battle maidens aren't goddesses? Goddesses don't have to be dainty and just sitting around and, you know, occasionally blessing a marriage. They're badasses on the battlefield.
I mean, let's be real, like, the idea that someone in this instance, specifically more woman, is like either dainty and delicate or like rugged, exactly, is completely nonsense. Like, you can do both. Do whatever you want.
It's also very modern. Like, it would be kind of bold of us to say that the Norse thought that the maidens of the slain were like princesses or something. That's not quite right. The idea that goddesses need to be dainty is very 20th century.
Oh, no, absolutely. It's definitely modern. I wouldn't say 20th century. I'd even venture to say maybe 19th century, where femininity was looked at as, you know, frail and quiet and reserved. And that when you look at all the art of goddesses from across different cultures. Goddesses are always shown with very soft features. Very often their hair is like just straight or very soft. You look at it, the whole thing is very soft and very pretty. Yeah. And so it's that even goddesses are pretty and quiet and
the ideal woman.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I would also argue that with the Valkyries, we kind of have a habit of like doing a full feminist 180, going from, well, if they aren't soft house goddesses, they're hardened, hardcore badasses. And for some of them, that's totally true. They're like, some of them are legit named like Spear Disorder, Wife of the Spear Battle. But we also have Air, who's Mercy. We also have, I was just looking at one, All Caution, or one whose mm-hmm. name translates to Wise. So I don't think it's safe to say that they're like all badass bitches who are going to kill you and drink blood out of your skull. And they're not all soft sweetheart goddesses. There's a false dichotomy. They're a whole spectrum of what femininity can look like.
It's like they're individuals or something.
Get crazy.
Yeah. I thought.
How dare you?
Women?
Yeah. And I will say for this podcast, I've started working with the Valkyries a little bit, but when I start working with new deities, I move about at about the pace of a snail. So like I'm here mostly just to like intake information and make comments and make sure everything makes sense, whereas the other three are much more knowledgeable about this than I am
because they're so cool.
I'm so excited for you.
They're badass. I think one of my favorite excerpts about the Valkyries be in Njal's saga. So it's like, with war's alarms, our warp blood red, our weft corpse blue. This woof is awoven with entrails of men. This warp is hard whited with heads of the slain. Spears blood sprinkled, for spindles we use, our loom iron bound, and arrows our reels. With swords for our shuttles, this war woof we work. So weave we, weird sisters, our war-winning woof. It's just so cool. And then that's one like part of the Valkyries, is the kind of blood-soaked, got body parts everywhere, and being badass, but like pretty quite gory and quite monstrous, I guess, from an outsider's perspective. And we also have in the Lay of Helgi Sjafvason, about an unnamed man who becomes Helgi, because he's named, by the Valkyrie that he sees. He witnesses 9 Valkyries riding by, and he finds one who's particularly striking, called Svova, who is technically a king's daughter, so this is an example of a Valkyrie being made mortal or having mortal connections. And you've got this part about 3 times 9 girls, 1 girl rode ahead, white-skinned under a helmet, the horses were trembling from their manes. So, which is obviously a little less I'm on the battlefield killing everyone, and a bit more like traditionally dignified.
Like taking an afternoon like ride with the horses.
Yeah, they're just kind of, you know, riding around.
Yeah. I don't want to interrupt you too much, but I do have a question. So you said the one Valkyrie had some human ties in some fashion. Was that common?
I mean, it depends. On the heroic saga, it's way more common.
I feel like that happens a lot within Norse. I don't want to call them characters because that like validates the idea that they're made up. But you see, is it Saxo who like turned Odin into some like magic man with funny words walking around Scandinavia? I think I'm less god and more strange human being is not uncommon.
It's happened in the later heroic sagas to kind of reinforce the idea of these figures are awesome and like, you know, even if they're human by nature, that they have these divine connections, or, you know, makes them more special. It kind of ties into that idea of like Yngvi Freyr and his descendants being kings. In this scenario, Svova actually marries this man that she names Helgi, and I'm pretty sure they die and then get reincarnated. Putting aside the badassery of the Njal saga moment, I do love how some of the Valkyries appear in the Heimskringla, in particular how King Hakon died in battle. Here we have 2 Valkyries, Gondul and Skogul, who are tasked by Odin to choose who to give victory to, as is their duty. Hakon dies in this battle as decreed by the Valkyries who stand among the chaos. Gondor leans on a spear and speaks about how the gods' following grows larger, while Hakon speaks to Skogul, who he does refer to here as Gaia Skogul, with reference to a spear. And Skogul basically replies, matter-of-factly, that this is what was chosen. I quite like this immovable take on the Valkyries here. They're more akin to forces of nature. They're not biased one way or another, it's just what is, what must be. They also have some amazing kennings. What I quite enjoy about these is that they use the names of goddesses to be shorthand for goddess. The Shaking Sif of Rings is a kenning for Valkyrie, and also the Desiring Ron of the Excessive Drying of Veins. How cool is that?
That's so hardcore. I can't even begin to process it.
Excessive drying of veins.
That is deeply poetic in a way that Edgar Allan Poe wishes he could have achieved in his lifetime.
The excessive drying of veins is my new band name.
We're gonna have to make a Google Doc or something and post some of these, because I need them written out. Mm-hmm. If I need it, someone else does too.
Please.
I'm sure.
Yes, please.
We also have the Saga of Swords, again referencing Saga. Victory Maidens is obviously a well-known one. The Maidens of the Battle Slain. The Women of Mist, the Giantess of Spears. You also have Bow Women, Elm Bow Women, Sword Girls, which is a bit weird. The Sword Girls are coming.
Sword Girls? Sounds like an anime.
So modern. It's very like e-girl who games or cosplays and streams it on Twitch, the Sword Girls. It almost reminds me of the Hex Girls.
It sounds like anime.
Yeah.
It's good.
It was like, if it was already done, this one, it would be a case of, Sword Girls.
Sword Girls. I don't know, I ran out of ideas.
And then now we've got it. We've got it down now. I got someone's mistake or what? Last minute panic.
Yes. Oh, that's so good.
Slaughter Women, Goddess of the Shield Rim. We have Freya of the Slaughter Gate, and Slaughter Gate would be the Shield Wall. Like that idea of ramming against it and just being stabbed.
So they're using a kenning inside of a kenning there. Slaughtergate as a kenning for like the shield wall, right?
As the structure. And Freya as a
Welcome to unpacking kennings and shit. There's kennings on kennings on kennings. It's like a fucking, when you open a box and there's another box inside.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Women of Weapon Points.
Pointy bitches out there.
They're so cool. It's so kind of like,
some of them.
I mean, all the kennings are cool.
Some of them are super badass. And cool. Then we get the pointy bitches.
So
new kenning, pointy bitches.
I keep a list.
I'm writing that down. I'm
writing down the modern ones that I find in conversation, and they're hilarious.
Oh, we need that, and just things like Odin's maidens, which is just a descriptor.
Rude.
We have wound giving Valkyries. A lot of academics these days tend to want to separate the Valkyries from the action, but I feel like a lot of the kennings fly in the face of that. Wound-giving Valkyries very much suggests a participant in the battle rather than just passively looking over it. We also have individual kennings, so Guna, Blood Ember Goddess, which I mentioned in the intro. Ravens and eagles are known as the Osprey of the Valkyries. Wolves are called Guna's horse or steed. Thrutha has bloody wound curing, so a bit like air in that regard. Bloody wound curing. So very much the opposite of, you know, the excessive drying of veins. And in terms of like kennings I come up with myself, just because it's an active, we don't really have, well, I mean, I say we don't really have that many. I've just listed like, I don't know, 15 or so. But things like corpse devouring, because there's an instance of, I think it's Guna, has wolves that eat corpses on the battlefield, which is rad. And stuff like bone crushing, corpse maidens, flight footed, battle bound, maidens of the slaughter, friends of the raven, raven feeders, swan coat goddesses, fate chosen, battle charged, realm travelers, blah, blah, blah. Coming up with your own kennings is valid, guys.
I've fully seen people seriously refer to the Valkyries as the bitches of the slain.
Cool.
That's one of my favorites. I've seen that one too. I may or may not use that sometimes in my practice with them.
I think it's valid. I think they'd like it.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. They have that. They're awesome and they know it. Oh, I love them. They're awesome. We won't do a bones repeat. We're just going bones, bones. Bones are amazing.
But they are amazing.
They are amazing. I know. We'll do this with the Valkyries as well.
Oh, well, okay.
It's like the Valkyries are so cool, guys. Next section, archaeological evidence / academic discourse. For the last 60 years or so, the prevailing idea is that the Valkyries are Odin's servants. I've also seen places that refer to them as Odin's daughters. I imagine that was put into a book once, and less informed sources just run with it. For clarity, they're not. Hilda Roderick Ellis in Gods and Myths of Northern Europe says, "They carry out Odin's commands while the battle rages, giving victory according to his will. If they're not Odin's servants, as we've touched on, they become wives and daughters, almost dismissing their importance." This view has persevered over the decades, with many prominent academics taking the approach that they serve an almost secondary importance. It's really only in the last few years that this is being challenged. Across the board, we're seeing a sort of balancing of the scales in reframing the goddesses as important figures, regardless of how comparatively little they are mentioned in the available lore. The Valkyries are no different in this regard. That's not to say that the Valkyries aren't closely tied to Odin, but I think the relationship between the two is more complex than what has been the prominent paradigm over the last few decades. The bloodthirsty battle goddesses we stumble upon seem almost primordial, ancient, raw forces on the battlefield that seem at odds to the image of the Aesir, even considering Odin's reputation as the mad god. I guess the crux of this reevaluation really lies in the idea of the Valkyries having agency and acting as judge, jury, and executioner on the blood grounds. The poetic canons we have, and the nature of the skaldic tradition, really puts the Valkyries as front and centre of the action, placing war fetters, deflecting arrows, or guiding them true. With Eir, we have an example of a Valkyrie, a name meaning mercy, potentially acting as a field medic to save those that the Valkyries have chosen to live. This is also seen with Thrutha, who has a kenning of bloody wound curing, as we've just mentioned. They're multifaceted. We should also consider the Valkyries' connection to Freyr. I've seen a number of academics dismiss this connection, namely by stating that Valfreyr, Freyr of the Slain, which is a name that she is given once, is simply referring to a Hall of the Dead, but ignoring the more natural connection of Freyr, according to Snorri, getting first choice over the Valkyries chosen. This is a relationship that isn't developed or explained, which is par for the course, and I have my own theories. In terms of archaeological finds, they're constantly being found, and others are being re-examined. A paper by Pence in 2017 suggests that there are Valkyries iconography on distaffs, the importance of which I will get onto right now in the next section, entitled Theories.
Currently imagining you, there's that gif of you've got your murder board up and it's covered in thread and it's just got theories written in sloppy paint above it on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
So they're theories.
Yes. I feel like I'm really irritated because as much as I want this to be a deep dive, I feel like we'll be here for 6 hours if I was to go into everything.
It's okay. You're the one editing it.
I have stuff I have to do today.
Okay, it's fine, we're fine.
Just we go in and out, we'll rotate.
Oh, God. Okay.
Whose turn is it to comment?
Okay, we on theories.
I know, you're up. Yeah, we're on theories.
Okay.
Everything herein is to serve as brain food, so to speak. It's mostly conjecture, though it's not born entirely from the ether. I'll quote sources where applicable. And we're leading straight into the Valkyries as weavers of fate. This is the bulk of my current research, tying historical Sæter with the manipulation of Weird, connecting the Valkyries, Freyr, and Norns together. Sæter being connected to weaving isn't disputed in the academic sphere, and that paradigm has been set in stone for over a decade. What is less determined is the connection between Sæter and the Valkyries, but that's my current focus. My belief in UPG sees the Valkyries as being trained by either Odin or Freyr, or both in tandem. This really stems from the idea that, during the Great War, the Vanir and Æsir reached a stalemate due to the former's use of Sæter to heal those that had fallen, or otherwise manipulate the battlefield to avoid an Æsir victory. There's nothing solid in the lore about this, but it's being pieced together from the little fragments we have. I thought I was being original when I first wrote that down, but it turns out that Ursula Dronke very much beat me to the punch on that one. Thank you.
We have other connections between the Valkyrie and at least one Norn, though, right? Skuld, the Norn of the future being woven, is directly named as a Valkyrie.
Mm-hmm. We also have Snorri being really odd. He also mentions Eir as being a Norn that dictates necessity.
Snorri being confusing? Never. Ever.
Insert damn it Snorri sound here.
Damn you, Snorri! Yeah, he gets really confused between Norn, Dissia, and Valkyrie, and you see that a lot across, not even just Snorri for well, once. It's
clearly all female goddesses are the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Oops, all Frigg.
It's all Frigg. Fine, we're fine.
Yeah, so yeah, Skuld is named as a Norn and a Valkyrie. I think there's something to that, but there's no evidence. There's any mention in the lore beyond that one instance. We also have Skuld, who is in the saga of Thjalfkraki. That I think she's separate. But yeah, the Valkyrie, and there seems to be a crossover between the Valkyries and the Norns, which is interesting, and I don't really think anyone's looking too closely at that, the exception of Karen Beck Peterson, who wrote the Norns in Old Norse mythology. It was largely, it was passed over as kind of just a slip, but
I mean, it is.
We'll see. I'm working on it,
because there's only so many places to look, and so much of what we have has already been Christianized, altered, oops, all Freyed. So it's hard to know, like, mm-hmm. when we're reading something, is it like this because this is how it was, or is it like this because someone wrote it this way?
It's times like these that I imagine Odin watching over the chaos of the Great War and coveting Sather and the power it holds. Like, can you imagine the Varnia Sather workers just forming this line and just weaving Sather, and the Aesir can't do anything about it? It's just a cool image in my head that I can't get out of my head. And, you know, an idea forms, and he thinks, yes, I'll make peace with them. And hostages are exchanged to enforce the truce. But of course, Freyja, one of the most skilled, if not the most skilled, Sather worker on the Varnia, is among them, and that's kind of the key, and also Njörður and Freyja come along for the ride. But ultimately, what I really want to determine, as impossible as the task is why Freyja receives half the dead. Snorri just spits it out there and just leaves it hanging, infuriatingly, just there.
I mean, what I would also want to know is, why does she get first pick?
Exactly. There's something so crucial here. The Valkyries are seen as Odin's servants, but it seems more like Freyja gets first picked and Odin gets the rest.
I would say too.
It's like, a part of me wants to say that everyone is wrong. It's not Odin, it's Freyja. The Freyja's kind of army. But of course, there'd be so much kickback on that. But I can say it on this podcast. You can't stop me.
Especially because so often in Norse poetry and sagas and things, there is a degree to which we have to deconstruct misogyny written into it, because these were written by, like, Christians 150, 200 years later, if not longer. There's inherent misogyny written into this, which is why we have the oops all Frigg problem, because goddesses are erased. So it's not, we can't say that the lore supports the theory. We can say that deconstructing the way the lore was written can lead to other conclusions.
But I wanted to also say, like, you know, along with misogyny being in the lore, when we're talking about, like, Freyja, Odin, etc., we're talking about gods, and gender is a very human construct. Mm-hmm. So, like, it might have been written out that way just because that would be a way we would understand. So it's all likelihood. It's very likely that they were equals or something else. This is just me, like, my thought process on it. And so it's likely they were all equals because, like, what's gender to a god?
Yeah, that's a super good point, Thea.
Why does Freyja receive half the dead? And not only that, get first pick. Richard North, in his book Heathen Gods in Old English Literature from 1997, again steals my thunder a touch here when he puts forth the idea this is her teacher's fee, so to speak, her fee for teaching those that would become the Valkyries how to use Sather to manipulate the battlefield to their whim. Ursula Dronke and Richard North both see Freyja as the archetypal Valkyrie. Siegfried Dobar says that Freyja emerges as the mythological role model for the Valkyries in the Dissia, so she may have been the first Valkyrie of a sort to see if it worked as intended to give Odin his undying army. And that's very much where my beliefs and UPG settle, that they're intrinsically tied. And the fact that Freyja gets first pick and half of the dead suggests that she has this, you know, iron connection to the Valkyries, something crucial. I've also seen it's quite common for, say, Freyja worshippers to almost want to distance themselves from the Valkyrie because they see it as almost by lowering Freyja to the Valkyrie's level. And I think that's the wrong way of looking about it. You know, they're very much goddesses in their own right, with, like, Air, for instance, and potentially Skuld being a Norn. I'll get onto this a bit more later on, in that I see the Valkyrie as an occupation rather than like a classification of sorts.
That was actually one of my first theories that I heard you talk about. And it was like, that was part of that light bulb moment. I was like, oh, that makes sense.
It's the most elegant solution to how we see the crossover between, example, like, you know, being one of Frigg's handmaidens and also being mentioned as a Valkyrie. A lot of people, and, you know, heathens and academics alike, try and justify it by saying, oh, they must be two separate beings. But if you are to make the Valkyrie as an occupation, a title, then who's to say that Eir wasn't a Valkyrie as well, as being, you know, a goddess associated with healing? And especially, you know, those aren't mutually exclusive. If we are to say that the Valkyries decided who lived and who died on the battlefield, then that the first half there, who lived, would, you know, give evidence for Eir's role and duty on the battlefield to heal those that weren't fated that day to die. And I quite like that idea. They rule completely over that domain.
Well, and also, if you look at it that way, shows more personhood for all of the Valkyries, because everyone's going to be better at one thing than other people or what have you. They'll just have their strengths. And so, I mean, that could just be like Eir is a Valkyrie as more of a quote unquote job, because she can provide that aspect that they needed.
Exactly, yeah. And we see that with, when you think of the Valkyries' names, they all, most of them, not all, have this kind of like gnarly kind of meaning behind them, like, you know, Teeth Gnasher and all of that. Yeah, I mean, Devastator. But you also have, and I'm pretty sure I'll mention her later on, Alrun, which means like ale or beer rune, which is very different. You've also got names that mean truce or council truce, or like Swan White, very much leaning into that more dignified aspect.
Even when you look at ones like Kara, which is storm, or Curly, depending on who you talk to, depending on which translation. I'm like, okay. And mist. Mist is the obvious one. Like, mist. That's all mist. It means. Oh. So it's one, that's what I always think of it as, you know, when the visibility goes dark and they can't see in front of them, so they can kill who they need to be killed. So, yeah, those are two of my favorite, like, non-murdery.
I think Kara was cool for Storm. I think I did read some justification for Curly in terms of maybe like an Odin cult with curly hair. That's off the top of my head. I think that's what it was.
Yeah, that's what I had read with it, yeah.
And like Rota, disorder and sleet. You got this kind of image of like arrows falling from the sky, almost like rain. It's really poetic and really cool.
Mm-hmm. I really like, I can't say the name, Valthogen maybe? Mm-hmm. Hostess of the Slain. Mm,
so cool.
I enjoy that a lot because the Slain, of course, is super like badass and hardcore. Mm. But the idea of a hostess is much more. Maybe I'm just biased because I think about hostesses as like 1940s era women hosting Tupperware parties.
Welcome to Valhalla.
But, like, that dichotomy feels super cool.
Oxymoronic.
It's a total juxtaposition.
I quite like Skogul, like, for me, like maybe Shaker Battle, but also High Towering. Kind of gives that kind of divine aspect to them, just being really tall and awesome.
One of my other favorites is Thogan, Silence.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me think of that, like, moment after the battle is done, very like Gettysburg Address and vibes, where we're standing over the battlefield in total silence thinking, holy fuck,
yeah,
that just happened.
Yeah. And that silence. Kind of goes into the whole Gondul and Skogul thing I mentioned earlier of just like, Gondul leaning on a spear and just taking it all in, like the whole absolute silence of the aftermath.
Why I have chills talking about the Valkyries.
So cool. I'll get onto this more, but there's the idea of they've persisted so much in the zeitgeist, but yet we have so many questions about who they were, what they did, you know, their importance, how we've described them over the years, if that's wrong or right, or, you know, even a fraction of what's truth about them. But yeah, I don't want to go off on too much of a tangent because that's really cool. But right, back onto the Valkyries as weavers. I'm going to go back to Simic again, who says that the name Svupil may be descriptive of the influence the Valkyries have over Weird or Orlog. Saether having strong connections to weaving. That's established. As we see through the archaeological evidence, particularly the burial sites of suspected Volva, Saith workers, notably the presence of drop spindles and distaffs. The Valkyrie Gondul's name had a strong connection to this staff that the Volva wielded, her name meaning wand wielder or staff bearer. I feel that this connection was more overt originally, but all we're left with is relative scraps to try and put together. The Norns are also associated with weaving when it comes to weird and fate, forming the connection between weaving iconography and the manipulation of weird. Though, almost hilariously, they're not as frequently associated with weaving as the Valkyries are. Though the idea of fate being presented as a thread is present, I think it's called Orlog Sema, fate thread, in Regensmull 14. The previous examples I mentioned involving the Valkyries highlight their association with weaving in turn. From using the entrails of men to spinning linen on the shores, I highly recommend Elder Haider's Spinning Sather for more detail on all of this, including the idea of spirit cords and distaff use. I believe that is free on the internet on his website. Ultimately, I see being a Valkyrie as an occupation, a title of a role undertaken. That helps justify some of the crossover we have of known goddess Air and Thrutha potentially also being Valkyries. Perhaps those goddesses most talented in using Sather become Valkyries. The connection to Sather also offers some justification for why all of the known Valkyries are female, again with consideration that historical Sather was seen as a feminine magic, though it is to be noted that case does not hold true today, or even in the sagas themselves.
Like I said before, with the whole idea of Valkyrie as an occupation, not like a quote-unquote race or something like that, like I said, that was like, I think that was one of the very first things that kind of clicked with me. I was like, yeah, because, you know, it, like we've seen, there's instances in the lore where they're just riding around with their friends, basically.
Mm. Having a great time.
In a girl's night.
Right!
Every day is girl's day.
Right, like they're literally having just a girl's day riding through the countryside, and one of them happens to find a really cute boy.
And names this cute boy.
I can't tell if this is...
And you can't tell me I'm wrong.
Oh, sometimes they're just having a girl's day.
What I really like is that Svova, the Valkyrie in that story, means, I think, sleep maker or killer.
Oh. Oh, man-eater. Love...
Now I've got this one, man-eater.
The idea of sleep maker as a kenning for, like, killer or murderer is a thing that I live for.
Yeah.
It is so awesome. Good.
Little did Helgi know.
Shit, man.
Right. Next theory, ale runes. I guess something I do want to touch briefly on is the Valkyrie ale rune, and how her name might give some clue to Valhalla, about why the Valkyries serve mead in the hall, in addition to it being a position of dignity. A little theory I have is that the horns may be engraved with runes that inspire the warriors to fight restlessly and eternally, and maybe stop them from, you know, not wanting to be there. Just a thought. Odin knows runes. Those runes are engraved on the horns.
I mean, it makes sense. Like, unless... I mean, I guess that really depends on what people view the afterlife as. Like, if you can only be in one hall or if you can go to others, like... Or if Valhalla is just, like, extra cursed in that way.
The discourse around that is fascinating. In that, of course, you have the heathens today that see Valhalla as heaven. But in the history, it definitely had that change of, you know, just another hall maybe to, oh, this is a warrior's paradise. This is heaven to us.
I mean, now I'm thinking about Mad Max, so.
The Thunderbolt. Ooh, afterlife episode. Yes.
Yeah, we should probably do that.
As you guys get little nudges into what happens in the chat while we're doing this.
Yeah.
Yeah. My brain goes
constant spurt of ideas.
Afterlife episode.
Yeah, I think that would be really good.
Which, I mean, it would be really good. It would be very heavy UPG, but I'm cool with that.
I'll keep it. I'll be the recon of the group and try and go lore wise.
The eclectics from running away with the card.
Stop! The lore.
Sif's like, come back, look at these.
It's our job to make connections. It's Sif's job to go, oh no, wait, I read that somewhere. You're not all that far off. That's the dichotomy here.
Yeah.
That's great.
So we're talking about ale rune.
Yeah.
Ale rune, whatever, however you say it in Old Norse. You see ale and ale runes pop up so much in Old Norse magic.
Mm.
Like, alu, the combination, it's one of the only carvings, or one of the few carvings we have in Elder Futhark, and it translates or transliterates to A-L-U, alu. And I'm pretty sure that it's a reference, or we assume it's a reference to ale. Mm. We don't know how it worked magically in context.
We do have stories of magical mead.
I also would, so where I'm coming from with my point is I could definitely see a lot of magic being based around mead and ale and stuff, because that was probably primarily what they drank back then, because in the processes of doing this, you end up sterilizing the water by heating it and whatnot. And, you know, it's not like they had amazing water processing systems then to like clear out the gunk.
Stupid.
So I mean, and ales and stuff would have had a lot less alcohol content back then than they do now, but yeah. So I mean, that's how I could see a lot of magics being based around that, because it's like, how many magics do you know nowadays that are based around water?
Thank you, Theo.
You speak truth.
Speaking truth.
Yeah. You had your debut.
I have my moments.
Debut.
Yeah, that's something you see all the way through the medieval period. It's the debut.
But it's my day margarita.
I mean,
that's what I was going to say.
I was like, isn't day beer technically a thing in a lot of places still?
Oh, yeah. It's a mimosa.
Fun. Or Sunday brunch.
Drink responsibly, everyone.
Mimosas, yeah.
Don't drink if you're underage.
Yeah.
Yes, please.
Sober heathenry is valid.
How far off topic you get?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Magical mead is very on topic. Something else that is a theory, although it's very incomplete and is more, as I said, brain food. I'm just going to throw it out there about what the purpose of Sesromnia is, which means many-seated hall, which is Freya's hall. We have no information at all on this hall, apart from the fact it has many seats, and that is it. And why do the Chosen Dead go there? What happens there? Why does Freya choose them? I have had certain people suggest that she chooses the half that are, you know, very skilled warriors, but they maybe don't have the, what's the word, intent to fight anymore. Their warrior spirit has left them.
I'm remembering one story from the sagas that kind of made me think Freya's Hall was more desirable. It was a story about a girl who resolved to starve herself until Freya took her into her hall.
Egil's Saga. Yeah, and she was a devotee of Freya. Yeah, don't kill yourself to join a hall.
Eating is good.
But what communicated to me that Freya's Hall was not this, like, parallel to Odin's Hall. It makes sense that a warrior would want to die an honorable death and go to Valhalla. Sure, I can get behind that. But for a random human person, a girl like me, go, I need to be in Freya's Hall. That is so valuable to me that I need to do this to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, and I guess that to me, that says that you don't have to die in battle to get to Freya's Hall.
No.
Because if I could be incorrect in this statement, but from what I understand, to go to Valhalla, you have to die actively in battle.
Yes, from what we have in the lore, yeah.
Yeah, and there's nothing directly saying that the only people that end up in Freya's Hall are the ones that the Valkyries pick for her.
But also, so like on that point, like, I don't know too many soldiers. I know a few, but like, you know, I know people that have deployed and whatnot that, like, they did it because they joined the army for whatever reason. And, you know, they did their they served and or are still serving. And they don't enjoy being in a battle, but they do it because it's necessary for what they're doing in the army. But I've also met those soldiers who really enjoy the battle. Like, it is one of the primary reasons they joined. So if we're thinking about how we were saying, like, if Freya was to pick like the, like, for instance, in that situation, would pick the soldier that was in the army just because it was like a means to an end, or like they didn't particularly like want to be in the battle, or they didn't like revel in the battle. She might pick that person versus the person who is just like, the battle is my life and I revel in this, and this is one of my biggest enjoyments.
It makes me think about whether or not it's like what the Valkyries are actually doing. And this is completely me just getting this idea now, getting the battle worn. The ones who are done with the battle, the ones who are over it. The ones who, yeah, we fight for whatever reason we feel we have to, but we're over and done with it.
Yeah.
Versus the ones that Odin gets, who are, you know, all about the battle, all about still wanting to fight. And why I keep thinking to myself, yes, we're all like, okay, Valhalla, not a cool idea for me. There may be some people out there that Valhalla seems like the perfect place when they understand everything. We all know the Brosatru thing of the Valhalla. Half or more of them don't understand what Valhalla actually is.
Yeah. I mean, and I personally know people that, not necessarily Norse heathens, but I personally know people that would prefer Valhalla, like, as it is versus other stuff. I don't know them well, but...
That is also very valid.
Your own thing.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But yeah, that's... I wish we knew more about Sesromnia. But alas, like most things, we do not. And lastly, on the in theory section, I did just jot this down, but if we're going to steel man the Valkyries as potentially mortal women, that they could potentially have been devotees of Freya, or particularly talented Saith workers, making like the priestesses of Freya kind of angle, in that they could have been like mortal women who became Valkyries. There is nothing in the lore. Well, there is, technically, but we just get the description that they were the daughters of kings or princesses. So I guess we do have lore evidence, but there's no kind of explanation of the mechanic behind that.
If I could go back to prime, like, this culture existed, I would just be like, go to everyone I could and be like, why won't you write this down?
Like that gif of SpongeBob. Write that down!
Write it, please.
Hide it. Yeah.
Right. I mean, because, you know, maybe not everyone listening knows, but the runes were just their alphabet and their writing system.
Just took a shit ton of effort to carve it into
a
rock.
They had that.
They put effort into carving things like, I reached a really high place.
Yeah, this is the thing. They're most unstuck.
Or, I fucked that. Or... I mean,
personal.
In their defense, we do have a lot of really amazing, this is so off topic, rune carvings referencing memorials, which is a really cool thing for the persistent idea of humanity, especially within the Viking culture, because it's so often represented as this like bloodthirsty hoorah, stab, stab, murder, murder culture. We have so many references to grieving, to mourning, to loss, to memory. Just super great. It's not really helpful when we're trying to figure out like actual Elder Futhark reconstruction. No.
Yeah.
Why would they make it easy for us?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and I also want to point out on that note that every Norse heathen was a Viking.
No.
At all. Not all of them were Vikings. That was a very... I'm mostly saying that because we brought up Valhalla a lot, and then, like, you know, it's just like, yeah, it was seen as a bloodthirsty culture, but, like, I think that's also because a lot of people are like, oh, they were Norse heathens? That means they were Vikings.
No.
And it's like, no.
And the thing is that Viking was probably
absolutely
more
true.
An occupation than an ethnicity. The Vikings might have been the warriors that ran out and did whatever. We don't know that there was a name or wasn't a name for the ones who stayed on the farms. The ones who stayed with their families. The ones who ran the local, you know, tavern.
They were just people.
Yeah, they were just mm-hmm. people, weren't they?
They're just doing Viking, human things.
They were just people.
I mean, aren't they all just
except
people,
for Odin,
really?
Odin is a god, people. Not a weird magic man walking around Scandinavia correcting the youth. Saxo. He could be both.
I mean, he could be both. He could be both. I mean, I don't know. Odin does a lot of weird shit, okay?
Just for fun. I'm sick of being a god. I'm gonna go be a weird little human person.
From Byzantium. Yeah, traveling.
He's back like a week later, and it's like, well, that was
would that
weird.
Surprise okay. anybody here.
Hello and welcome to What is a Topic with the human weirdos. Get through all of the theories. I think we did.
Theories, yeah, and I did enjoy your approach to a segue.
I did do that, I guess. I'm really good at making accidental segues. Like, I think I've done it.
Yep.
I think every time I've done a segue, it's been on accident, except for like two times.
Your timing is impeccable.
Yeah.
Ugh.
So yeah, we've come to pop culture. On the subject of Valhalla and pop culture, I did quite, I guess it's a spoiler alert. There's spoiler alert for the following things. God of War, Assassin's Creed Valhalla, MCU, Marvel Cinematic Universe, and the Marvel Comics. I think that's it. That's all I've touched on. But spoiler alert, initially, for Assassin's Creed Valhalla, I did enjoy their depiction of Valhalla in that game, in that it was horrifying. There's no other thing for it. You had, you know, the main character, Eivor, is reincarnation, has the soul of Odin. And she or he comes out of the sleeping quarters and is met with hordes of warriors who cheer Odin's name. And almost immediately, before you can get two words out, the bell rings and all the warriors storm out into the field and start fighting each other. And it's, although you're awesome and powerful in that moment, it is horrifying the way it's presented, as in it's like Groundhog Day. It's just death and life, and you briefly get to talk to people, and then you're back out in the field and you're killing things. And in that game, I think it's Sigurd, who plays your adoptive or brother or something. It's been a while since I played it. He is the reincarnation of Tyr, and every single day he has his hand cut off. And, you know, and it's just seen as awful, and it's just like a fade to white and then the wake up. And I think they kind of, I quite appreciated that depiction of Valhalla being not this paradise. And it leads to a realization for the protagonist that, you know, this isn't what they were led to believe. But more on the subject of the Valkyries. I think my favorite depiction in pop culture comes courtesy of God of War, the newest iteration of it. Not least because it manages to reconcile the two very different images of the Valkyries presented in sagas and Eddas. Again, spoiler warning coming up. Right out of the gate, we have a connection to Freya and the Valkyries, with the former having her wings taken by Odin. In the game, Freya was the previous queen of the Valkyries. And while this is often stated outside of the lore, it's not something I personally hold much weight to, but it was nice seeing the connection explored. As I've mentioned, I see her more as the archetypal Valkyrie, testing out how Sather would work on the battlefield to manipulate fate and weird. Further, when Kratos, the angry guy in God of War, for everyone that's completely, you know, this game is completely alien to them, first encounters the Valkyries, they are brutal and very much hostile. They are no holds barred and in incredibly difficult fights. The backstory is that they've been cursed by Odin to remain in their physical forms after Freya loses her position as queen, and Kratos basically needs to free them by defeating their physical shells. It's explained in the game that the Valkyries don't particularly enjoy being in their physical form, to put it lightly, and it eventually drives them mad. They're cast as sympathetic, but incredibly powerful figures. After they've been defeated, they become rational, you know, you can actually talk to them, and they kind of just rise up in, like, spirit form, and they eventually sit on the thrones waiting for their queen, who is Sigrun, to return. It's revealed that after the curse was placed, it was Sigrun that sealed the Valkyries to stop them running rampant in their madness. Without them, though, the dead started to overflow out of Helheim and wander Midgard. So overall in that game, you face 8 Valkyries plus Sigrun. And those are Gunnar, Kara, Gaedrifull, Olrun, Eir, Gondul, Rota, and Hilda. The meanings of the name of those Valkyries are as follows. Gunnar, battle. Kara, storm, wild storm, curly one. Gaedrifull means spear flinger. Olrun, as we mentioned, ale slash beer rune. Eir, helper, healer, mercy. Gondul is staff bearer, wand wielder. Rota is disorder or sleet, and Hilda means war and battle. I don't have a favorite Valkyrie, but if I did, I think Hilda might be near the top, as she is famous for starting a never-ending battle in the sagas. There's also little subtle hints to the lore of the Valkyries and the way they fight. Air, for instance, almost feels like your stereotypical cleric, using a mace and blinding light. All can seemingly channel the Bifrost to summon weapons or elemental assets into their fighting, tying into the realm-walking aspect of them. And a bit more of a stretch for what I find relevant to my Sather research and its connection to soul travel is that the Valkyries can present themselves in the game in more than one location at a time, or can otherwise split their soul. Maybe their huga, their mind, was carried in their helmets to be placed on their throne after their defeat, while other elements of their soul carried on their duty to ferry the chosen slain from Midgard to Valhalla. There's also a sort of cool connection to the Draugr in the game, that those chosen warriors can also deny the Valkyries and engage them in combat. They inevitably fail and are then doomed to roam Midgard as Draugr. Needless to say, the designs in-game are also incredibly badass. If you haven't seen them, I would Google them, because they look amazing. And that's my God of War spiel. I do like it. I do like the way that they incorporated very seemingly distant, separate pieces of the Valkyrie puzzle into one cohesive whole. It gets top marks from me on the Valkyries. Also, in Freya as well, her depiction in that game is really interesting. Although she is, again, it's Upsal Frigg. She is the one that's married, or was married, to Odin. They justify it as Odin gave her the name Frigg when she was married to him to hide the fact she was Vanir, which I quite enjoyed. I paused the game and went, that's clever. I like that. In the game, they were a little bit more at odds with each other still. But also in that game, Odin is a dick. Like, he's the Zeus character in that game. So yeah.
I love it. You're just like straight out, yeah, Odin's a dick in this one.
Yeah, he is. He really is. I played it on a reasonably difficult setting, and honestly, Sigrun was almost to the point of tears trying to fight her. She literally, you have all the Valkyries in like a circle around this kind of tear in reality, and you know, Kratos comes up there and he just kind of like just gingerly kind of, you know, like puts his hand in, and then Sigrun literally in like a jump scare just like grabs Kratos' neck and just flies into, oh, it's so cool. And it's like, yes! And she's just like, oh, all the Valkyries are like stomping on Kratos' face, and it's just like,
step on me, mommy. I will not apologize.
Don't ever.
don't ever. Right. And on the subject of the Valkyries persevering in culture and transcending time, perhaps the most known Valkyrie in modern pop culture at the moment is Valkyrie in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and by extension, Marvel Comics. While she is yet to be named in the Cinematic Universe, we know from the comics and actress Tessa Thompson that this Valkyrie is Brunhilde, Bright Battle. She is presented the last of her kind, so to speak, with the remainder being slaughtered by Hela. As of right now in the canon, she's also Queen of Asgard. On the subject of Marvel stuff, it's quite funny for me being a Marvel fan and also being a heathen, because the Marvel lore is very, very different to Norse myth, and it's, you gotta have that compartmentalization of, okay, I'm in Marvel mode, I'm in, you know, heathen mode, because in the Marvel universe, Hel or Hela here is the first child of Odin, not the daughter of Loki. And on the subject of more the comic book side of things, Brunhilde made her first appearance in Avengers 83 in 1970. She has a winged horse called Aragorn, and she has a badass sword called Dragonfang. She's the leader of the Valkyries in this setting, although the Valkyries don't really have a leader in the lore. And she's considered the strongest among them. I think she's also technically, currently, canonically dead as of 2019, alongside the rest of the Valkyries, which is wonderful. And that is my pop culture segment. I don't think there's any other main Valkyries. They don't appear, from what I can recall, in Assassin's Creed Valhalla. And those are the most on-topic, you know, yeah. Norse things.
Yeah, those are definitely the most referential, the ones you can access the quickest in the pop culture zeitgeist.
We've also got the Northmen that's coming up, and it looks like there's at least one Valkyrie in that, and she looks interesting.
I'm just excited to see the spear catch.
Yes.
Yes! Anyways, I'm very excited for that movie. I am.
Yeah, I'm curious about how they're going to tackle Sather and Valkyries. Those are my two, if I go to watch it, which I probably will, those are the two aspects I'll be honing in on, laser focused.
That makes sense.
I was gonna say, does that surprise anybody that those are the two Seth's gonna focus in on?
No.
Yeah. I'm really interested to see if or how they portray Hel, or also how much of like the lore will be involved, stuff like, and how accurate to lore it will be. Like, for instance, like with God of War, It's decently accurate to lore, mm-hmm. especially compared to like Marvel Cinematic Universe. Yeah.
Yeah, I would be, if they do bring Hel into it, I'd be very interested in, is she cast as the stereotypical villain monster that people are very tempted to always cast those figures as, or is she a little bit more sympathetic?
Yeah.
I guess one point I did want to bring up before we get onto kind of how we worship them today is the idea that I guess I've seen it more frequently as we've gone through and recorded the podcast and seeing people's reactions to them, is that I want to say something for new heathens. I know that you can easily get the impression heathens or pagans in this sphere that they know everything. For me, one of the things I wanted to personally achieve through this podcast was to be transparent in that regard, the things we don't know and what we struggle with. My best advice I can give is to try and take it slow. Start with the poetic and prose Edda, because that's your bread and butter. And then think about what areas you're interested in, or what you might want to read about more. I mean, for me, although I might seem this font of knowledge, far from it, I basically decided very early on that my areas of interest are Valkyries, Freya, Hel, Saether, and, you know, burial rites, death things. But I don't know. I can't grasp Yggdrasil. I suck at it. I know very little, surprisingly, about Loki. Despite worshipping Angerbotha and Hel. Equally, hilariously, considering Freya, I also know very little about the lore around Freya and so many other things besides. And I just wanted to kind of get that transparent aspect first and foremost of what you're seeing is the subjects I really want to talk about because I know a lot about them. And I guess if you ever bump into me on like the socials, there's massive gaps in my knowledge. And I guess it's kind of just putting that forth in that you're the people that you watch and listen to in podcasts and YouTube or other heathens or the pagans. They're not going to know everything. They're going to really be either they're only going to talk about the stuff they know about, or when they're talking about it, they're going to have done a crap ton of research and a ton of notes before they deliver that information to you. So if you're feeling overwhelmed, take it slow. Take it one subject at a time and make loads of notes.
Don't feel like you need to know everything. Right now, you'll never know everything.
Yeah, I was gonna say, if any heathen ever tells you that they know everything, they are lying to you.
Run.
if you
ever hear a heathen telling you I know everything, I'm an expert at everything, y'all know that TikTok sound.
Oh no.
No,
yeah, nope, that's not it.
Mm-hmm, exactly. I mean, Valkyries are my jam, but get me to talk about... oh, I don't know.
Sif, tell me about younger Futhark.
Please don't. I can't. I know there's one that looks like... Is it upside down Angus?
That's an Anglo-Saxon.
Is it the letter K?
They're runes?
Anglo-Saxon has that upside down Algis that means Kalk, I think, but they only have one reference to it, and I don't even know that much about Anglo-Saxon food. Like, I am a bad heathen. Just kidding. No, not a bad heathen. A nerd. Anglo-Saxon's a bitch and a half. Even though we have the most sources on it, I don't know why my brain hates it so much.
There is a Old English word for Valkyrie.
I think it's Valkyria. I think so. From like that. Valkyr.
That's it. That is it.
Something close. Get Sig to type it for us.
Valkyrie?
We need someone to transliterate it.
Yeah.
We'll just have one of our... We'll have an Anglo-Saxon episode. It'll happen.
Yeah. I wanted to get into it, but I was like, I'm not going to even try and pronounce it.
Okay, or something. Whale. If W-I-C-C-E is witch, I'm pretty sure this is Valkyr.
Yeah, also, it sounds
but
like Valkyrie.
The Anglo-Saxons took the V sound and made it a W. It's super similar to Valkyrie, but a little less badass. I mean, what?
Also in Anglo-Saxon, they've got a presence. They transcend the Norse boundaries. I think they have some pretty badass kind of kennings as well.
I think that's just Sig.
Yeah. Yeah, well, there we go. Call out the Sig.
She's it. You love that. Thank or you. Hate it.
Right. Books and sources. This is my jam. Unfortunately, most of the literature on the Valkyries is scattered across the sagas and across various books. Naturally, I would recommend the poetic and prose Eddas and a highlighter for going through them. That's exactly what I did. I used tabs and highlighters. But, you know, they're there. They appear every now and again. My eternal recommendation in this sphere, I will be a broken record on this, is The Viking Way by Neil Price. Though it is dense, it is thorough and academic, and I love it. There's also Valkyrie, Women of the Viking World by Joanna Friedrichsdottir, which is also fantastic. That's relatively recent. I think it came out in the last... year, 2 years. Hilda Roderick Ellis's The Road to Hel has a nice chapter on the Valkyries as well, and it's overall great read. I'll probably put links to everything in the doobly-doo. But yeah, there we go. That is the sphere of my obsession.
Give your voice a break for a second, I guess. Jay, do you want to talk about your experience with the Valkyries and like lead us into a discussion of Praxis?
I can do that. We're actually releasing a coffee break about my very first experience with the Valkyries. That'll be out in a couple of days, so keep your ears out for that. But for me, the Valkyries are that archetype of badass bitch energy. When I need that little extra boost, they get an offering. I offer them really strong black coffee. It's a UPG that they love it because it gives them that extra little push of energy that they need.
I love that. Literally, like, got chills. I was like, as you said, extra dark black coffee. I was like, oh, fuck, that's correct.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, shot of espresso dark.
It is lining up on the bar. It's going, doosh, 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 just downing shots of espresso.
Yep. Because what is a badass bitch who's got to fight on the battlefield need? They need their energy. They get a small offering anytime I offer to Freya or Eerd as well. Kind of, you know, hey, your friend's getting something. Here's a little something for you. And like I said, they're kind of my posse at my back. Anytime I need a little boost, whether it be like I need a little oomph to kind of put my foot down on something or just that little extra, you know what, you are a badass. God knows, in the past couple of weeks, I've needed it, and they have never failed me. Their presence is very hard to explain. They aren't always the Kool-Aid man, which when you guys hear my story during coffee break, you'll understand. They aren't always that, like, boof, we're all here. Oftentimes, it's like we always talk about, it's that small little something. So I'll either feel that little extra kind of boost. I can't explain it. Like, I can't explain the physicality of the scents. Or I'll feel like a hand on my back, like, you got this, but we're right behind you. Mm-hmm. So that's been my praxis with them a lot. I know you have praxis with them as well, Kenna, don't you?
I have a tiny little bit. I've heard a lot of people say that once they get in really deep with Freya, the Valkyries show up. But when I got in with Freya, Norns were who showed up to me first. Not in that, like, typical offering way, because you don't ask the Norns for anything. They've got business to attend to. I don't give a fuck what I want. I give a fuck what I make happen, you know? Because of the connection between Skuld, the Norn of the becoming future, and the Valkyries, I'm edging, starting to feel more of that Valkyrie energy in there. Granted, I seem to have taken the long way around with them, which is fine. I got COVID in January, and that was my hard push into the fact that I needed air in the Valkyries in my life. I have, like, a little altar to air, as I own a Girl Scout troop. That's not how words work. I lead a Girl Scout troop, and I will be embroidering a bind rune for air into the first aid kit that comes with me everywhere. So I'm incorporating her as a healer to my life that way.
I love that.
Very good.
Yeah, because I have a separate praxis with air on her own. I've said this before too. I don't know if I've actually said it on the podcast, but people have heard me say it. Air was kind of my, like, my extra push to, hey, you're a Norse heathen, come with me. Air is a natural choice for me, kind of, because I'm in healthcare. I'm at the past 2 years. Anyone in healthcare who's needed that extra little boost of, like, you're doing the right thing, you're good, I got you. So yeah, having her around too. But like kind of said, it's when you start with Freya, she brings friends.
And I have heard from you and from a few other people, Jay, likes to bring air first. I think it's because air is the least scary. It's like introducing one friend, yes, and then, like, there are 52 others outside. It's fine, don't worry about it. Air is really nice, isn't she? What do you think?
Is the face.
That definitely sounds about right. Yeah.
It's like, here's this healing.
You ready for murder?
Oh, goddess. You got shouts in the background.
Aerith's inside introducing herself, and everyone else is, like, banging their spears to the beat of a song outside.
Ignore
and Aerith's not telling you She's not showing you her battle kit. She's showing you her regular mundane first aid kit and, like, her 9 herb charm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the pestle and mortar.
Yeah.
There's a nice...
She's not showing you the battlefield medic kit she's got strapped to her back. Not at first.
This is not to say that if you are in or working with or have a relationship with Freya and don't have the Valkyries in your life, you're doing it wrong.
No, not at all.
No, I think you have a really good working relationship with Freya, but I don't recall you mentioning the Valkyries. Is that right?
So, I have a good working relationship with Freya. I'm starting to work with the Valkyries. But as I said earlier, like, when I start working with deities, I go really, really slow.
It's totally valid.
So, like, it has been kind of one of those things where it's like, I have Freya, I've started working more with Air, and I'll work on it after that, but I was just kind of like, I need time.
Just totally valid.
You know, to figure this out. Which, like, in my UPG, there's no negative feelings about it or anything like that. It's just like, okay, you need time.
There couldn't be. It took, from the time Freya came around into my world and into my practice of any kind, to Ear showing up, was at least a decade, if not longer.
Yeah.
So
there's nothing wrong with that.
If anyone's gonna understand boundaries, it's the badass bitches of the battlefield.
Exactly.
the pointy points. Bitches.
Literally.
Title pointy of the episode, bitches. The pointy bitches.
Well, the school sisters.
What about your praxis with them, Sif?
My praxis. I guess first and foremost, it was Freya that I reached out to. She was the first god, straight out of atheism. just because I thought, oh, she sounds cool. And also, you know, the Valkyries, I was always aware of them. I was in the culture, they're quite present. And I had this almost like, my kind of praxis of Freya is very much one of self-empowerment. And, you know, she always presents herself as a warmth, like quite, not stern, but, you know, she knows what she likes and what she wants and what she wants out of you. And every time I worked with her, I definitely had that kind of like fiery feeling in my chest. And it kind of got to a point where whenever I was kind of meditating on that feeling, I would have this acknowledgement or feeling, this other presence around her, behind me, kind of just in space. And I had a few, I don't want to say dreams because I don't think I was properly in the sleep state, but of like a very foggy area and just having these very indistinct shapes just there watching. So for a while, I kind of had that feeling of being watched. which wasn't overly comfortable or comforting. And it kind of got to a point where I just kind of said, okay, no, I know what I know worships the Valkyries. And I was still relatively new to heathenry. I think it was about a year in. And I was like, okay, I guess I'm going to have to just reach out then and see what happens. So I think it's them because, you know, I've been kind of obsessed with Valkyries for a while. And yeah, and as soon as I did that first offering to them, I think I offered them and they said, like, hi, is this you? Hi, it's me. It's me, Sif. Is this you? all great starting rituals are. They're a little bit kind of just like shots in the dark. And almost immediately, I had that war drum feeling in my chest. And I was like, oh, shit. This is... Okay, this is the thing. I could take that as a yes. And they felt loud. They were so loud and overwhelming. And it felt like my heart was popping out of my chest. So I had to like almost like break whatever connection I had and just step away for a bit because it was overwhelming and powerful. That would be clocked as one of my like 3 like big UPG moments. And I still feel it to this day of whenever I give an offering. It seems a little bit softer. I think they might have realized they scared me a bit. It's like, oh, okay, she's delicate. So I still have that kind of like war drum feeling in my chest, but it kind of depends on who's there. Because obviously I don't have all 52 all the time. You know, obviously Air feels very different. And at the moment now, I'm just trying to gauge who is there and when. And like Hoya has very powerful presence. She's one of the few that I've actually thought, oh, that's you. Because she does feel like, I don't know who said it. It might have been you, Theo, about the Valkyries feeling like the dwarves in The Hobbit.
Oh, yeah, that was me.
And like her, you're kind of barging into your little hobbit kind of home and kind of eating you out of house and home.
Kool-Aid man.
Exactly. You know, the loud and raucous, but not all the time, not all of them. And you got maybe a few that are sitting in the back and reading, kind of like get jostled in and kind of the elbow in the ribs. And, you know, together they're this multifaceted, complex group of very distinct personalities. And yeah, in terms of my practice with them, it really was, as I said, I didn't know anyone that actively worshipped them at the beginning. It was very much, okay, I've got to get my head down. I'm going to have to read more of them, potentially put together what they might like, want to offer them. I need to know their names, and try and get a feel for, really from the ground up, how to worship them. And for me, to kind of go a really roundabout way of saying that, I see them as, again, very empowering. They're, you know, they're the kind of like hand on the back, like patting you on the back, kind of like shoving you forwards, just like ruffling the hair. Like, you know, we've got you, we've got your back, you've got this. Or other times, you know, they're very wise and a bit quieter and stoic, more echoing that sort of dignified women on horseback kind of vibe, and like them guiding, nudging me in that direction. I kind of see them as, to kind of go into kind of the more Hellenic sort of aspect, is that you had like Athena kind of seen as a guide for heroes, and like a champion for heroes. You may not know what you want to achieve or whatnot, but, you know, we've got your back and we'll dispense wisdom occasionally. You know, sometimes you'll feel like your chest is about to explode, but in a good way. And, you know, we're here. I mean, yeah, long story short, still an evolving praxis. yeah, that's it.
I know, I've felt them too. I know a lot of us have talked about Freya likes to throw you into the fire, but only if she knows that you can handle it. And one of the times that she's done that to me since I started working with the Valkyries, she's doing the shoving. Mm-hmm. She's like, you got this, go. And you've got the Valkyries on the sideline, almost as cheerleaders, kind of going, you got this, you don't need our help, but we're here, kind of as like moral support. Because you're thinking, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what I need to do with this. What the hell? And they're like, we got you. You're good. Mm-hmm. You don't need the backup, but we're here if you end
up
needing
it. Don't fall, but we will catch you, but like, don't fall.
Yeah, exactly.
You need to know, I'm now picturing the Valkyries in like full battle gear in like a cheerleader pyramid.
Oh no.
Which I was getting, and this is because I'm hanging out with a 2-year-old a lot, is, you know when you get children to like climb up the playground on their own, up the ladder the first time? And how dads hover behind them, Valkyrie wings out, full gear, and it's like a toddler trying to handle a jungle gym. That's what it feels like. Of course, because you very clearly know the kid can handle it. But you're still going to be right there. It's that, the catch.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, they feel, there's a humor to them, 100%. They, Yeah, and as scary as they might seem, they kind of scared me away a little bit to begin with. You know, they feel very... Benevolent seems like the wrong word, because you can only describe how, like, the tearing men's entrails and stuff. A good portion of the available lore kind of describes them as almost monstrous. But they definitely feel like they've got your back. And despite all of this kind of, like, gore, you know, they're very... They quite like interacting with humans. I mean, that's their entire job.
Right.
Their entire job is... basically acting as that bridge between Asgard and the gods and Midgard. They're very used to interacting with people. They're used to our kind of eccentricities. And so, yeah, not that I'm trying to promote anyone to worship the Valkyries, although it'd be awesome if there were more of us. You know, if you're ever like on the edge of wanting to reach out, I would say, you know.
Please join the party.
Please, because there are so few of us.
Or just a few. You can there pick like three of them. Dozens.
Yeah,
pick like 3 or 4 that you really like. Doesn't have to be all 50.
No,
you can be like me and you can move at a snail's pace and just pick them up one by one,
and they'd be okay with that.
Yeah,
yes.
Let's start with
that's what I did.
She's the easy one to start off with.
Yeah,
and quite honestly, like, if I keep going and it's just too much, I won't pick up anymore.
Yeah.
And that's totally valid.
Knowing your limits is important.
Mm.
Yes, very much so.
Boundaries. Say no. You can have that option.
Yes.
You will always have that option. I don't care what anyone else tells you, that if you interact with a deity, you have to continue that relationship. Nope.
No.
You absolutely have every right to say, you know what? I don't want this, or I can't handle this right now, or just no, straight out, no, you have consent. So if your consent layer is, okay, I'll work with Air and not the other 51 of them, great. If it's, I'm going to work with Freya and not the Valkyries at all, great. If it's, I'm going to work with Valkyries but not Freya, I mean, go for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that's it.
I think it is.
I think so.
Wow. My voice is slightly recovered, so let's get going. So, for now, if you're listening to this on YouTube, don't forget to weave the connection between the like, subscribe, and bell button. Or follow us on Spotify or where any other podcasts live to make sure you don't miss an episode. In other news, we have a Discord server. Check the description for a link to that. And with that, I will end it here. And remember, as always, keep heathenry weird.
Bye, guys.
Weedini.